I'm Margaret, and I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ. And I'm really happy because yesterday we found out we're having another baby, in case, like, y'all don't know. So that's the glow. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, who's in recovery and struggles with self-loathing. It seems like I've been a believer since I had self-awareness, and for all y'all who don't know that what that means, basically since I could remember, you know, who I was. My old King James Bible has my mother's handwriting in it, and it says, Margaret received this Bible today because today she accepted Jesus in her heart. I was 3 years old. My parents met and married in Southern California in 1972. My sister Joyce was born in January 1974, and she was the answer to their prayers for a child. I came along in November of 1975, not being a boy, and making my mom eat hospital food on Thanksgiving. My brother James was born in March of 1978, and there was much rejoicing because he was the boy. My dad was an aerospace engineer, and he worked out of state a lot during my growing up years. My mom was a homemaker who loved her house, children, and her extended family. We spent lots of time with them, a big, loving Mexican-American family where if you cross grandma, you face certain doom. I remember gathering around a small kitchen table in Santa Fe Springs, drinking coffee with my grandparents and mom, and hearing the family gossip. In the fall of 1982, we moved to Northern California. In the little town of Twain Heart, we lived in a house that you got to after you went down over 100 steps. It was nestled on a mountain and charming. We spent our only white Christmas there, decorating a tree and listening to the Carpenters' Christmas album. That's the happy memory I have of that place. A few months later, with my dad still working in the southern part of the state, my mom left us in the care of another family. She had taken off to help her close friend to do what we didn't know. I was 7 years old, and my world became empty and cold. The family was nice enough, and the routine they had set out helped me survive and cope. Each morning, we rode the bus to school, driven by the dad of the family. In the evenings, we did homework and then prepared school lunches for the next day. At bedtime, I cried myself to sleep until lights out an hour later. At school, we sang songs like, "This is the day that the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it." I knew the Lord had made the day, but nobody was going to make me be happy or glad for anything. After 2 months, my mom came for us and moved us to an apartment in Carson City, Nevada. We lived there without my dad, but with my mom's friend and her two younger sons, ages 6 and 4. They left us unsupervised for days at a time. When a police officer came over and asked how long our mom had been gone, I said, "Oh, a couple of days." The truth got me into trouble with my mom when she came back. I acted out and was beaten with a wire hanger. Time passed. We moved closer to family again. My parents made up. I went back to school and finished the second grade with the help of a tutor. When I was in fifth grade, my parents announced we were moving to Texas. I hated the move, and the next few months proved me right. We went from the Holiday Inn in Bedford to a cockroach-infested house in the north side of Fort Worth. I was a kid from the suburbs who used to ride my bike all over the place. Now there were certain streets I avoided and certain people I avoided. These people were bullies, gang members, and worst of all, they were my neighbors. I got teased at school for being different. Different eyes, different last name. Different because I wasn't on the lunch card program and I actually brought my lunch. Different because I wasn't familiar with a lot of Spanish. I just didn't fit in, and they made me feel like the outcast I knew I was. Middle school and high school were full of teenage drama. I got through it, and on paper, I looked great. I graduated from a magnet school. I had good grades. I did all this volunteer work, and I was headed to Baylor University. However, inside, I was a mess. At the age of 15, I had lost my virginity. The youth pastor at my church warned us kids, "Don't blow it." Well, too late for that. I avoided dating and was convinced that one day I'd be HIV positive because of this mistake. I was damaged goods, and any chance at a relationship should be considered as good as it gets for me. College was tough, not because of the workload so much as my numerous distractions. They were male, and they were all over the place. I had no idea how to have a friendship with, let alone a romantic relationship with anybody. When I focused on classes, I discovered I was good at foreign language and studied Russian. I acquired a boyfriend I'd met through AOL. The fact that I wasn't attracted to him didn't stop me. I just internalized what everyone else said. He's a nice guy. You should be grateful to have him. Naturally, every time I broke up with him, it was the same thing. Poor him. I finally broke up for good when I started dating his friend. Glenn was a guy who had worked with him, had access to Microsoft products for cheap, and also teased me mercilessly about my computer system. I didn't like him at first, but eventually I became attracted to him and fell in love with him while still dealing with the breakup fallout of my ex-boyfriend. Glenn and I became engaged on Valentine's Day, 1998. A week later, there were two blue lines on a stick that changed our lives forever. I was about to become a mom before my 23rd birthday. None of my family was around, and saying goodbye to Glenn on a plane was the loneliest night of my life. Telling my mom and the rest of the family wasn't easy. My mother was angry. Her first reaction was, "How could you be so stupid?" Never mind that we all wanted to get us married as soon as possible. It was not what a mom expects of her daughter. But still, I felt deep shame even after we did the right thing and got married on March 10th, 1998, in Reno, Nevada. How could I have joy at the prospect of becoming a wife and a mother when all I heard was stupid? Long after we had settled down and prepared for the baby, I still felt like we hadn't done it well enough. I had shame for myself and resentment for anybody who was achieving the goals that I had to abandon, like graduating college, graduating from grad school, whatever. Sam was born on November 6, 1998. We were happy to welcome him into our world, and I knew he was the most important job I'd ever have. I've been a stay-at-home mom since day one with absolutely no regrets. Life went on in a happy way. I was sure that it was just luck. Not that we were doing anything right or anything. Our daughter Sophia was born in November of 2001, and for once I could say I was pregnant without everybody frowning. A few years later, our son Joseph came along in January 2004. Things were great. One loving and adoring husband, three beautiful children, the blessings of a home and family and friends. If only that were true. The truth was, I had bitterness toward my parents for the way in which I was raised. Abandoned more than once, lied to, told inappropriate things by parents who are supposed to protect you from such explicit talk, and betrayed more than once. I got sick of it all, and I suppressed anger until it went into rages against my husband and children. I had so much anger and so much shame within me. My family of origin did not model grace and mercy, and so I judged myself with absolute hatred. I became convinced my husband would be better off with a new wife, and my children would be better off without their mother. It was in this state of utter despair that my husband took us to Northwood Church in March 2004. We were warmly greeted by a couple, and they invited us to their adult team meeting later. At this meeting of poor folks who only wanted to discuss the purpose-driven life, I fumed about how I hated my parents, especially my mom. God is merciful, though, because these people did not flip out and chuck me out the door. Instead, they told me about going through a group called Making Peace with Your Past. Many of them had been through it themselves and had been better off as a result. I knew this support group for adult children of dysfunctional families would help me, and of course, my husband knew that it was I that needed help. At the first meeting, I, of course, started spewing the story of my abandonment, punctuated with sobs that came out of nowhere. In subsequent meetings, I'd be the one cracking jokes about the workbook or scoffing at the suggestion that I say how I feel or that I forgive. There was no way in heck I'd forgive anybody. It was pointed out to me by the facilitator that I use humor to cover a lot of hurt. It was also pointed out that I needed to have boundaries. I said, "I do have boundaries." This led to the facilitator becoming so frustrated with me, he asked me to stand up, and when I did, he promptly pushed me so hard I nearly fell on the floor. Those without boundaries will always be knocked down, he said. It was at this point in the group that a raw nerve had been struck. I hated this guy, wondering why in the world he wanted me to open up my soul and examine its contents. So many tears flowed, and the ugly reality of my life showed itself before me. I saw that my marriage was on the verge of collapse, that I had only one or two friends who tolerated me, and that I was just an angry person in general. I couldn't be the one who had it all together because it just wasn't true. And the only one who could help me now was God. God took my broken heart and began mending it. In my brilliant human thinking, I never thought I'd forgive those who hurt me. But with God's help, I learned that forgiveness was necessary if I wanted to move on. We did a forgiveness exercise where we looked into the eyes of another group member as if they were someone who had hurt us. That day, I told my mother how disgusted I was with her and how she'd hurt me so much when I was a child, but that God was asking me to forgive her because she was his child too, and she was hurting. In that instant, I forgave her. God gave me his love for her, an everlasting love that I couldn't have made up on my own. My old life was gone, the one where I was insensitive and judgmental. Now I could feel my feelings and name them. Most importantly, I gave to God all the concerns I had for others. A weight was lifted off my shoulders when I no longer felt it my duty to tell everyone else what was wrong with them. And I felt content in making boundaries, setting boundaries with those who otherwise might put me in their drama. It was here that I got a lesson in learning to trust God. Due to feelings for someone else I had that were so intense, they consumed me. My mind was filled with confusion over whether or not to stay in my marriage. As much as I wanted to, I could not be philosophical or intellectual about my state of mind. Any effort I made to share with any friend was met with condemnation, making me feel utterly alone. When I told my husband of my struggle, it was good for him to know the truth, but I felt like I was under a cloud of suspicion. I knew God wanted me to rely on him, but I was too stubborn and proud. As a result, I had this unneeded shame for years. When I heard about Celebrate Recovery at Northwood, I knew it was something I wanted to be a part of. Though I knew who God was, and I had been a part of a great support group, I needed something to come to regularly. Coming to CR for the first time, I was greeted by a kind and caring lady named Susan. She would eventually become my sponsor, and she was there to give me encouragement when I felt like I didn't belong at the meetings. She said, "Nothing happens by accident. God has you here for a reason." Becoming part of a step study group helped me heal from the deeper issues of the past and hurts of the present. Transparency with other women helped me to be open, to let out pain and anguish over hurts caused by others, and make amends to those I hurt. James 4, 8 through 10 declares, "Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be miserable, and mourn, and weep. Let your laughter be turned into mourning, and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and he will lift you up." Fourth step is the moral inventory. You start by making a list of good and bad events of your life. And since I don't like myself very much, I listed all the bad stuff and ignored all the good stuff. This step was the most important to me since it helped me see that many hurts of the past had caused patterns in my life. It explained me better than I could explain myself. It also let me off the hook for any guilt I had associated with physical, verbal, and even sexual abuse. Making amends was also an important step. Here, I apologized to my husband. I wrote letters to those I hurt, expressing sorrow and anguish over what I did to them. Many letters I did not send for the risk of injuring others, but I felt free and like unburdened all the same. And here's where it's kind of confusing. Through CR that I've experienced the joy of serving others. I've led open share groups, step study groups, and I've even greeted once or twice and participated in the very awesome home makeover. That was very cool. Also, I have a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ. Jesus is the face of love, and the depth of his love for me is staggering. He was obedient to death upon the cross. taking punishment for my sins. His grace, the acrostic for which is God's riches at Christ's expense, are truly enough for me. Today I understand God has me here for the purpose of glorifying him. I don't understand it most of the time, and usually all I have to do is get out of God's way, be obedient, he does the rest. God gave me intelligence, patience, and diligence to stay sane as a mom. And slowly I am understanding commitment as a wife. Instead of suggesting he find himself someone else, I remember that without me, my husband would be completely lost. And that's the absolute truth. God gave me somebody like him to provide for me and the children, to pay the bills because I'm no good with money, and be the love of my life in our ups and downs. And just want to say this in closing to those of you coming here to CR. Know that you are welcome here at Celebrate Recovery, that Christ is at the center of our recovery, and that you are loved and accepted. Thank you very much.
Wow. So
I love that.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, yeah.
Turn the mic off.
Turn the mic off.
Keep coming back.
I have to pull some down. Oh, sweet.
I'll put it on mute.
Hi, my name's Thomas. I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, celebrating recovery from drug addiction and alcoholism. Everybody, drugs really messed up my head. All right.